All right, I want to welcome everyone tonight for the first of this three-part series on the afterlife. A very relaxed, calm topic, right? A little sarcasm, right? Before we begin, and I introduce our very popular guest speaker, I'd just like to thank some of the sponsors for the series. We couldn't have done it without you guys, and really appreciate that. And just by name, Alan and Gina Tolmis, Larry and Jackie Chaffin, in memory of Dara Wiseman and Joseph Moskowitz, Richard and Nancy Greenfield, Honey Harris, in memory of Lane Harris, and for all your participation. So, speaking about Rabbi Leshock, introducing Rabbi Leshock, you know, I can speak about how he, his incredible influence, his impact that he's made over the last 30-plus years in outreach and connecting to people, inspiring people, but I'm not going to speak about that. I want to share something personal with you. And I say personal because I think it was around 24 years ago, maybe 25 years ago, in the beginning of Rabbi Leshock's career, I don't think he even remembers this, I'm going to bring back a memory. It was in the summer.
Should I stop the recording?
Maybe you should stop the recording. My wife is here, so it's nothing. It's all good. So he was running it. We were running a camp. It was the beginning of NCSY in Dallas, and I did something that was, to say the least, it wasn't so appropriate. I think I was 11 years old, and really, I did something wrong, and I got caught. Rabbi Leshock caught me. And I was really nervous. He's going to call my parents. He's going to scream and get me upset. He says, go into the Beis HaKnesses. Go into the Beis HaKnesses. So I'm waiting there. I'm getting nervous. What's he going to say to me? He's going to scream at me. And he comes into the room and he says one line to me. He says, Shalom, what you did was unbecoming of someone of your stature. That's it. And I was like, whoa. You know, I was expecting, and it made such an impact on me. He didn't scream at me. He raised me up. And this is the person Rabbi Leshock is. A true educator. Educator par excellence. Someone who knows how to deal with people of all ages. And it really gives me great pleasure to have him come speak. You know, moving back here to Dallas, you know, I grew up in Dallas, but moving back and getting involved in the field of outreach and education is such a schut, such a merit to have some connection, so to speak, to what Rabbi Leshock's been doing for so many years. And I want to thank you for not screaming at me, so I appreciate that. But really, it taught me such a lesson. That's how you teach, is by example, by raising people up. And I know this class is going to be something that is going to be so educational, and I know Rabbi Leshock is not the one to, there has to be a back and forth, the questions, answers. It's about involvement. So without further ado, I'd like to call Rabbi Leshock to. Rabbi Leshock wanted just to mention, you know, this, they'll speak a little about kind of what JED is and what we do. So we run program throughout the year. One of the programming that we have, a weekly program, actually it's every other week, we have a partners program that you're all invited to. Just look us up on our website, jetexas.org, you can sign up, and we set up partnerships with people. It's really enjoyable. Feel free to stop by, ask questions, call us, reach out to us. We're here for the community. We're just here to educate, to teach, and trying to inspire. So without further ado, Rabbi Yisrael Leshock.
Thank you, Rabino. You were so cute then and still are. That I don't remember the incident, but before we start, we want to make the blessing for the Torah, because we're not just studying any subject, we're learning the words of God. And so we're going to be making the blessing together. If you please join me. Baruch Atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam Asher Kedishanu Bemitzvotav Betzivanu Laasok Bedibrei Torah Baerev Na Adonai Eloheinu Et Dibrei Torateja, Befinu, Ubefi, Amcha, Beit, Israel, Benie, Anachnu, Betzeitzainu, Betzeitzaye, Amcha, Bet Israel, Kulanu, Yoidei, Shemecha, Belomdei, Torateja, Lishma, Baruch, Ata, Adonai, Amelamed, Torah, Leamo, Israel. I'll make this part by myself. You answer, Amen. Baruch Ata, Adonai, Eloheinu Melech Haolam, Asher Bacharvanu Mikol Amim, Venatan Lanu Et Torato, Baruch Ata, Adonai, Noten HaTorah.
Amen.
Adonai Sefatai Tiftach, Ufi Yagid Teilatecha, La'asod Nachat Ruach Le'yotzreinu. So I just want to thank Rabbi Roden and Dr. Shafron and all the people who put this together. Thank you very much for having us here. And we have a lot of people in our community and many friends who are not feeling well. They should have a refuah shleima. So, you know, if you think of anybody who needs a refuah shleima, please think for the next couple seconds their names, that they should have a refuah shleima. Hopefully our Torah should be able to move the Kisei HaKobod. We believe that in the seventh heaven there are two thrones. And we believe the master of the universe, obviously only one God, but he has two thrones. Sometimes he sits in the throne of judgment, and sometimes he sits in the throne of mercy. We have the ability together, we have the ability, the possibility, the capability to remove God, so to speak, from the throne of judgment and ask him politely to sit in the throne of mercy with our tefillahs, with our prayers. So we pray for all our friends who need a refuah shleima. Okay, so some of you who have gone to my past classes have learned a little bit about this. So I'm going to ask Mechila, I'm going to ask forgiveness. For the next 5 minutes, I'm going to give you a recap. Most of you already know what I'm about to say, but it's essential that you learn this again or refresh it. Because we cannot understand anything that is going to be happening in the next three classes unless we know the basics. So there are two things which are prerequisites to comprehend everything that we're going to be talking about in the next three classes. So the first is what we call the introduction to mysticism of Kabbalah, which is what we call the Nama de Kisufa, the bread of affliction. The bread of affliction, the concept goes like this. This is by far the most important concept you will ever learn to understand mysticism and, so to speak, the secrets that we're going to be learning about for the next three classes. Nama de Kisufa tells us the following. It says, when God created the world and the universe, what happens is all the souls, absolutely all the souls, were sitting with Him in the Garden of Eden. Everyone, all the souls were sitting in the Garden of Eden. What happens is, the souls are sitting right next to the Master of the Universe, and one day, God goes around and he sees that some souls don't look too happy. So he goes around and says, what's going on? Why are these souls, this group of souls over here, not so excited, not so happy to be here? So they start saying to God, it's like, we don't deserve this. We've never done anything to be sitting here in the Garden of Eden. We have never done anything. And now we are being rewarded. We do not feel that we have accomplished all this. And therefore we feel bad. We have never done anything for it. So says the master of the universe, Borei Olam, we haven't earned it. Thank you, wifey. So the Borei Olam says, the master of the universe says, all the souls who feel that way, please move to the right. Half of the souls stand up. I don't know if it was half. I don't know how many. I wasn't there. They didn't invite the Mexicans. Please stand up. And all the souls over here who feel that way, please move to the right. All the other souls who don't feel they're happy here, they're content, they're enjoying, they're having a blast, please move to the left. I don't know exactly what the number is. Many of those souls who were not content, God said to them, so what do you want? They said, we want to earn it. We want to be with you because it's the greatest pleasure in the world. The greatest pleasure is to be with God, but we haven't earned it. So God said, I have a plan. All of you people, all of these souls on the right, I'm going to take you, and I'm going to send you to a place called Earth. And I'm going to put you in a body. The soul will go inside a body. You will live 70, 80 years, whatever it is. You will work very hard to accomplish many things, which we're going to talk about it soon. And then when you are finished your task, then you're welcome to come back, sit in the Garden of Eden, and now you will love it because you've earned it, you're accomplishing it. You like the idea? They said, yes, we love the idea. They said, he said, it's going to be very hard, it's going to be very difficult. It's called the bread of affliction. It's not going to be easy. As a matter of fact, the Kabbalah, the Zohar says, and the Talmud also says, that this world is the world of affliction. You're going to go down to the world of affliction. You're going to have to endure many tests, especially, and you're going to have to suffer a little bit, and then you have to fulfill many missions. If you do that, you're welcome back at the Garden of Eden, and you will be rewarded. Every single soul who did that is in this room. Every one of us. We were those people fetching, complaining in the Garden of Eden, said, we don't like it here because we haven't earned it. So God said, I'm going to put you in this world, inside a human, inside a body, so to speak, and you're going to have to suffer tremendously. The problem is, and which I'm going to talk about not in this class, I'm going to talk about in the third class, is every single one of you in this room has been here many times.
Oh, yeah.
Because we keep on messing up. And we keep on coming back and coming back and coming back. So that original plan of Namadek Isufa, that we were just going to come down for 70 years and we were going to get it right, it just didn't happen for at least anybody in this room. Because we keep on coming back. The reason why you and I are sitting, forgive me for being so blunt, is because you and I have never finished the task. We keep on coming back to this world of suffering because we don't get it right. So every time we go back, God sends us back again. We're going to talk a lot about that on the third class. That's the concept of Nama de Kisufa. All the other souls who were happy there, God said, your name is angels from now. You're welcome to stay here. You enjoy. You will have tremendous pleasure. But you will never be able to reach higher levels or lower levels. It's a big risk. It's a gamble. To come down here is a tremendous gamble. We really talk about gambling. We really gambled. Talk about the stock market. That's no gambling. That's nothing. This is the greatest gamble we've ever done in our lives. We came down here assuming, hoping, believing that by our actions, by our learning of a Torah, chesed, whatever it is, we will accomplish higher levels than the angels. Sometimes we do that, and sometimes we regress. That's the concept of Nama de Kisufa. Okay? That you have to understand. That is what we call the journey of the soul. The journey of the soul. There's a second concept. We have to understand what is the soul. What is a neshama? Before we can even go up farther and get into anything, we have to understand the basic of what is a neshama. The soul is a part of God, is a portion of God. Basically, what lives inside of us is a portion of God. God, so to speak, whatever that means, God, so to speak, took a portion of himself and put it inside of you. But it's not that simple. This neshama, this soul, what God did is he took a piece of himself, so to speak, and what he did is he broke this soul into five parts. One of them is inside of you. The second one is your spouse, your loved one has your second portion. The third one, your best friend has a portion of your soul. The fourth one is buried in the land of Israel. And the fifth one is what we call the nitzotzes. Nitzotzes are particles. God took that fifth part of the neshama and he broke it up into millions of little pieces. I repeat, the soul has five parts. The first one is inside of you. The second is inside your spouse, your loved one. The third one is inside your best friend. The fourth one is buried in the land of Israel. The fifth one is taken and chopped up, broken up into millions of little particles, nitzotzes, sparkles, and spread around the universe. So may I borrow your bag?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not looking inside, don't worry.
Don't worry.
We have two angels We Jews believe that there are two angels that walk with us the whole time. What are these angels doing? And you sing in Shabbat, the angels come, they switch, they get special Shabbat angels and they bless you. What are these two angels doing with you the whole day, the whole week? So if you're really doing what you're supposed to be doing, the two angels are carrying bags. And every time you learn Torah, they are collecting thousands of particles of your neshama. Every word of Torah. Every word of Torah is thousands of particles of the neshama that they collect and they throw in the bag. Every word of Torah, every chesed, every time you help a poor person, an old lady across the street, every time you do a charity, you help someone who's hungry, etc., etc., they take thousands of pieces of nitzotzos and they throw them in the bag. After 80 years, 120 years, the angels take the bags, what has been inside, the contents, and they pour them, and they see if you really did your job or not. Once they pour all the contents of the bags, then what happens is there's something that looks like a puzzle, so to speak. And if let's say the puzzle, it's my Spanish, is it the puzzle?
If the puzzle
is supposed to look like the Golden Gate Bridge and it doesn't look anything like it, they say, well, there's a lot of pieces missing here, so you're going back. And that's why we keep on coming back, because it means we didn't accomplish everything we had to accomplish. We didn't collect all those millions of particles of nitzotzos. And that's why we go after 70, 80, 120 years, we go there, we pour the contents, and they say, this is not finished, you gotta go back. That's the two basic concepts that you have to understand before we begin it. Now you know what the soul is. Now you know the purpose of the soul in this world. It is the journey of the soul. Before I continue, in Yom Kippur, we read a very interesting part of the Torah. We read about one of the 24 books of Judaism. It's called the Sefer Yonah, the book of Jonah. Now, the book of Jonah, according to some of the greatest Kabbalists in the world, is not what you think it is. There was never a big fish. And the fish did not swallow Jonah. The Groh, the Vilna Gaon, one of the greatest Kabbalists that ever lived, said it's an allegory. The story of Jonah, the way you learned it when you were a little kid, that story is just an allegory. It is the journey of the soul. How does it start? He says, God goes over to the prophet Jonah and he says to him, you got to go to Nineveh. He's talking to this soul and he says, you're living in the Garden of Eden out here? No, you don't want to be here. We're going to send you to Nineveh. Nineveh means this world, Olam Hazeh. And he doesn't want to go. He's one of those souls that don't want to go down there. And he's like, no, I'm not going. And he tries to run away. And what happens is that soul eventually gets into the sea. The Groh, the Vilna Gaon explains, this is very Kabbalistic, it means that the sea is this world, earth. And if you see it, it says there is the big, you have the big old boats, cruise ships, containers. The old ones are always near the seashore. The younger ones, the strong ones, are always in the middle of the sea. That represents people. People, as they're young, they're willing to take risks. They can go in the middle of the ocean. And then as you get older, you start getting closer to the seashore. Because you cannot take so many risks. You have to be careful not to fall down, not to break your hip. And that's what's... And what happens is, he is so involved in materialism, this man Jonah, that he gets thrown overboard. And the fish swallows him. Says the Groh, the Vilna Gaon, the Kabbalists say, there was no fish. Well, since when can a fish swallow someone? Can you live 3 days inside a fish? And that's not... The Kabbalists don't... The Kabbalists say this is an allegory. It means he died. It means he died. It means a man who came to this world to do the job and he didn't accomplish his job, he dies. And then what happens is he gets spit out again and gets reincarnated. And now he realizes, I better do what God told me. And now he goes to Nineveh. Not only does he go to Nineveh, but now he tries to convince everybody else to do the will of God. The first time around, he messed up. The second time around, now that God has given him an opportunity. Now he comes out. Not only does he fulfill his job, his task, but he gets everybody else. He gets the leader of Nineveh to get everybody else to do tshuva, to repent. That is the journey of the soul. And that's how the Kabbalists explain. That's the growth, the Vilna Gaon. You have to... I told it to you in 10 minutes. This is a class my rabbi gave for 12 hours. I'm not doing any merit whatsoever. Now we understand. Nama the Kisufa, where does the soul come from? Now we understand what is the soul. Where the parts of the soul are and the journeys of the soul. I'm going to talk about for the next 20 minutes what happens when someone dies. And what is that journey of that soul? What happens? It's very important for us to understand this. What is the journey of the soul? So everybody knows in this room that we Jews have very, very strange laws, especially when it comes to mourning someone you love. Very strange laws. When my mom passed away, when my father passed away, and I sat in Mexico with all my friends who are not religious, who don't know anything about Judaism, they all sat with me. They all thought, literally, Rabbi Elshak, our friend, he's a nice guy, but he's really out of his mind. With all these weird rituals, laws, he's going to be there 7 days, and then the 30 days, and then there is a year, and it's like very strange. You've heard it since you were a little kid, so you're accustomed to it. But if you think about it, these are very strange, very weird laws. Nobody has any of this. Let me tell you what is happening really up there and that you and I have never understood. Why is it that when somebody dies and is a loved one, you must sit 7 days in the floor, take off your shoes, and you must sit there for 7 days? Why is it that we have something called 30 days, the Shloshim? Why is it that we have the year, the Shana? Listen carefully. Everything I'm about to tell you for the remaining of the night is based on the Ramban, Nachmanides, Rav Chaim Vital, and the Zohar HaKadosh. When the soul, when a human being dies, what we take is we take the body, the goof, and we put it on the ground. The soul lives forever. It's very important that you understand this. The soul lives forever. The goof, the body, is what goes inside the ground. What is happening the first, if you pay attention, if you really know the laws, the Shiva, what we call the first 7 days, is actually, if you really know a lot, is actually the body into two parts. There is the first 3 days, which are very machmir, they are very, very stringent. And then there is the remaining 4 days, which are very stringent, but less than the first 3 days. You're not allowed to leave your house. The loved ones are not allowed to leave the house. You have to cover all the mirrors. You have to take off your shoes. Very, very strange laws. Everything that we do, according to the Kabbalist, it has nothing to do for us. It's not about us. Everybody thinks that everything that I'm doing in my house, sitting in the floor and everything, is because I am suffering, because I lost my loved one. Says the Kabbalist, if you really believe that there is a God, and you believe that God is merciful, then you wouldn't be suffering. You would be celebrating because now you know that this soul that you love now is going to a much higher level and is going to be rewarded. So why is it that we sit down on the floor for 3 days, then 4 days, and then we have the Shloshim and then we have the year? Listen to the Kabbalist. Because noise be'oil chaveyo. There is a law, very strange law. We have 613 commandments. One of these commandments is a very strange commandment. If you see your friend who's carrying a very heavy load, you should go and help him. Your friend is carrying a very heavy load. You have an obligation to go and help. You see a lady is carrying a very, very big bag. You go over there and you help her. If your loved one is going through difficult times, you have an obligation to help your loved one. What does it mean? When somebody dies, the soul at that moment is taken to heavenly court and is being judged very severely. The first 3 days is tremendous, very severe, the judgment. So what happens is, let me tell you what the soul is going through. The soul does not leave the grave. The soul, says the Zohar HaKadosh, it remains in top of the grave. And that is why the loved ones sit down in the floor, because the floor represents the grave. I am carrying the load of my loved one. If my loved one is going through judgment, then I have to do something to show God that I am with my loved one, and I will do anything and everything. I will go through the same process that the soul is going. According to the Kabbalist, everything we do, it has nothing to do for the mourner. It has to do to help the soul in his journey. So the first 3 days is going through a tremendous judgment. Therefore, the soul does not leave the grave. So therefore, we make ourselves and our house a grave. The house becomes like a grave. And that's when you sit on the floor, you take off your shoes, it becomes, there is really no real, you can go anywhere, you can leave. It becomes very, very, you are following your loved one in the journey of the soul. The first 3 days. After 3 days, the soul realizes there's nothing left here by the grave. And the soul moves from the grave to the house where the Shiva is happening. And that's why the halacha says the first 3 days are more severe. And then the 4 days after that is less severe, because now the soul has moved from the grave, has moved to the house of mourners, to the Shiva house. And now the soul wants to be with his loved ones. So the soul is very confused where to be. At the beginning, he misses the body, which is very strange, because he doesn't know anything else the first 3 days. After that, he realizes that there's nothing here for me anymore, because I cannot be connected to the body anymore. So he realizes his loved ones are trying to help him. They're carrying my load. So the soul now moves to the house to be with the mourners. And that's why the remaining 4 days, now, if you really according to the Kabbalah, I never ever go to a mourner's house the first 3 days. Unless I'm out of town, it's going to be the only day that I can come. Because really, you're not allowed to comfort someone who's suffering the first 3 days. Because the first 3 days, they are in so much suffering, they are inside the grave, so to speak. So therefore, you cannot comfort them. You can only comfort them once the soul has left the grave and has come to the house. Only then they can be comforted, and only then should you be there to try to comfort. This is according to the Kabbalist. And that's what's happening. Everything you are doing, everything we do, all the halachot, all the laws, are that we are following, supporting, helping the soul, the journey of the soul. After 7 days, they leave the house, because the soul is not in the house anymore. The soul has left the house. And therefore, where does the soul go? The soul now starts going back and forth between earth and Shaman. It keeps on giving answers, so to speak. It gets called to heaven once in a while to answer questions about what they did during their life. They call the 30 days. The first 30 days, the soul is not anymore in the house. Therefore, the loved one is allowed to get up, walk outside, take a shower, etc. They can move on because the soul is not in the house anymore. Those are still very stringent days, the 30 days. You don't shave because the soul is still back and forth and is still suffering because it still hasn't, the soul hasn't found a resting place. And that's why you're still with your loved one. You are following him in the journey, so to speak, the first 30 days. The soul continues to come back and forth. After 30 days, the soul is told he cannot come here anymore. Does not come to the earth anymore, only in special occasions. So So therefore, the 11 months, what we call, people call 12 months, it's really not 12 months, it's really 11 months. And for the 11 months, the soul stays in heaven. And once in a while, it gets a special permission to come down to earth. That's what we call the Shana, the year. And we, so to speak, everything we do, we don't go to weddings. We don't go to, why don't we go to weddings? Why don't we go to celebration? We don't go on a cruise ship. We don't buy new things. Why? Because the soul is still in limbo, so to speak. He hasn't been given its complete resting place, so to speak. And it's still in a light judgment. And therefore, you can't go on a cruise ship because your loved one is still hasn't found a house. So who are you to go enjoy yourself? That is what's happening the first year. After the first year, the soul is allowed to return here only for very, very special things. To help you if you are in trouble. To mostly for that. They get special permits to come down to help you, to help the loved ones if you're in trouble. Mostly for that. That's the idea of the journey of the soul. Questions? Please wait until we finish the class. I know you have a lot of questions. And then we'll take the questions. That is the idea of the journey of the soul. Is what we call in Judaism life after life. How come the Torah really, the Shebichtav, the written Torah really, you don't find this? You could spend 20, 30 years in a yeshiva and you're never going to find any of this in the written Torah. Why is that? Everything that I'm going to be telling for the next three classes, if you go back to one of these books over here, that you pull it out, if it's from the written Torah, you're not going to find any of this. Why? Have you ever thought about this? If it's something so important, why don't we know more about it? And why isn't it more written about it? Why is it so secretive? Anybody? The Rambam, Maimonides, says, because everything in the Torah, in the written Torah, is about life in this world. And God doesn't want you to be worrying about something called schar ve'onesh, reward and punishment. One of the, in Judaism, I hope you write this down. The most important thing you should learn in Judaism is called the 13 principles of faith. Everybody learns Talmud and this and that, and there's a lot, and they don't, and a lot of people don't even know the 13 principles of faith. The basic of Judaism is you have to know the 13 principles of faith, you have to be willing to give your life for them. And one of them, which is very important, talks about the concept of reward and punishment. Reward and punishment, schar and onesh. Every religion in the world is based in three things: the concept that there is a higher being, there is a book, and the concept of reward and punishment. Every religion in the world has these three things: a concept of a higher being, a book, and a concept of reward and punishment. Judaism doesn't have three, it has 13. But we do have reward and punishment, it's very important. But God doesn't want you, says the Rambam Maimonides, to be doing things for the reward. We say in Mishnah Perkei Avot, Al tihyu hameshamshim et harav lekabel pras. Do not serve the masses so you can get reward. Ela tihyu ka'avadim hameshamshim et harav shelo lekabel pras. Serve the master not for the reward, but because you love the master. Because you love your Father in heaven, and that's why you're doing it. So therefore, if I start teaching you all these things in the written Torah, then you're going to be doing all this for the reward. And God doesn't want you to go in for the reward. And that's why all these things are very hush-hush, says the Rambam. Okay? There is another concept. Rav Salvia Gaon says, and also Nachmanides, that the reason why none of this is written in the written Torah is because if you think for a second that there is no reward and punishment, especially reward, let me tell you something very important. This is very important that you have to know, but Judaism is very different than any other religion in the world. The reward is always 500 times greater than the punishment. Nobody tells you that. The reward is always 500 times greater than the punishment. Says Rav Sadia Gaon, why is it that we don't talk about the reward? Because why would I even spend time talking about reward? It's obvious. The God loves you so much and is going to reward you. And if you don't believe that, then you believe that God is cruel. And therefore, that's why we don't even talk about it, because it's so obvious that God is not cruel and God loves you so much that there is obviously going to be reward. Like every loving father, he's going to take care of his sons. He will pay for the wedding. He will send them to college. Even if he didn't behave as nice as he could have been, the father's still going to take care of him. Okay. Now that we put a little bit of that aside, I'm going to share with you some powerful stuff. So I want to get into a very, 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 very interesting subject. 3 years ago in eBay, 3.5 years ago in eBay, someone actually put on eBay. It's not a joke. Check it out. Google it. Whatever you want. You go into eBay. It's not a joke. This is true. When I heard about it, I didn't believe it. Actually, we started doing research and we found out this was true. 3.5 years ago, there was somebody who went on eBay and says, I am willing to sell my soul. I'm willing to sell my soul, which means I'm willing to sell whatever my soul has accomplished in this world, meaning my olam haba, my world to come, my reward. I am willing to sell my portion of the world to come. And there was bidding. And this gentleman got $191,000 for his world to come. In eBay. 3.5 years ago, some gentleman in California sold his portion of the world to come, and somebody bought it for $191,000.
It's a bargain.
It's a bargain. So all the rabbis all over the world started talking about this. Oh my God, what an interesting concept. The concept is not new. It's been around for thousands of years. And the Torah talks about this for thousands of years. So much so, there was a great rabbi in Europe named called the Netziv. And the Netziv had a very similar case. There was a Jew, two Jews who lived in this little town in Europe. And one of them turns around to his friend and he says to him, says, I'm a tzaddik, I'm a righteous person. But I got a lot of daughters and I got to take care of them. And I got to make a lot of weddings. And I know God is very merciful. And I know that God still somehow is going to take care of me. Especially, I have to take care of my daughters. I will sell you my portion of the world to come. Are you willing to buy it? The other guy was a very rich man. And he paid a lot of money. I don't know exactly how to convert these rubles into today's, I have no idea. Maybe in the back they have an idea how it works. It would be a lot of money today. The rich man spent a lot of money, half of his fortune, buying what he believed was the portion to the world to come of somebody very righteous. Half a year later, starts finding out that this guy is not such a tzaddik, he's not such a righteous man. He just spent a fortune buying this guy's portion of the world to come because he believed he was a tzaddik. And now he finds out the guy is a lowlife. He goes over to the Netziv, which was the greatest rabbi in Europe, and he says to the Netziv, two questions. Number one, did I actually buy his portion of the world to come? One. And if I did, can I give it back and sell it back? And probably, third question, can I make money out of it? That's a good job. And the Netziv actually spends, he writes a book. There's a whole part of a book the Netziv actually sits down and he talks about this concept. This is very important to understand. Because if you understand this concept, you understand the journey of the soul. Incredible what the Netziv says. And the Netziv says an incredible thing. Says the father. He says, let me give you an example. Says the Netziv, let's say I go over, you have a beautiful field, you have olives in Greece, and you have a beautiful field that produces beautiful olives, and they sell for a lot of money. And I see that every year you're making hundreds of thousands of dollars out of your olives in Greece. And I go over to you and I say, I am willing to buy 2035, help me here, production of olives, or help me everybody?
Harvesting
of olives of 2035. In Judaism, have I accomplished or acquired anything? Says the Talmud, you got nothing. Because it's dovor sheloba le'olim. How do you know, number one, the lady will still be owning the field? How do you know that the fire didn't consume the field by 2035? How do you know the world will be around by 2035? How do you know there is a war and is actually going to be any protest? You're acquiring, you're buying something that doesn't exist today. You understand?
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't exist next month. It's certainly happening it exists in 2035. Says the Netziv. When you are trying to buy something for the future, you got nothing.
It's an option.
And says in it, maybe this gentleman just spent a fortune buying nothing. One second. You ever heard of a story in the Torah, very fascinating, that we've been taught since we were little kids? There's a guy named Yaakov and Esav. And Yaakov is sitting with his brother Esav, and he actually buys his bechorah, his birthright. Says the Kabbalah, what did he write? What did he buy? He bought his birthright. I never understood that as a little kid. What does that mean? I go first? I get to sit in the front of the car? What does it mean? You know, like I get the best seat in the house, I sit in the front. What does it mean I bought the birthright? According to the Kabbalah, it means he bought his portion in the world to come.
What does that even mean?
Not only that. Correct.
But
says the Netziv one more thing. Listen to this, because now we're getting to really understand the journeys of the soul. Listen carefully. You ever heard of two brothers, Issachar and Zvulun? There were two brothers. Jacob had 12 sons. One of them was Issachar. The guy sat and learned Torah all day. Zebulun was a merchant, went out, collected fish, brought it home, split it in half, gave half to his brother Issachar. And his brother Issachar said, I'll tell you what, I'm going to give you half of my learning. I know how to learn. I'll sit and learn Torah all day. You'll bring me fish, you'll bring me food. We'll split it in half, I'll give you half of my Torah. I have news for you. There are Jews all over the world who still do that today. I know hundreds of rabbis who sit and learn Torah and someone supports them. And these rabbis give them some kind of portion of it. How does it work? Says the Netziv, how does that work? You offer the fruits for 2035, they may not be around. How does that work? Not only that, says the Netziv, watch carefully. It says, now the other side. He says, you know, what's so amazing about Torah? Torah is like fire. If I have a candle, you know, Chanukiah, you have the Shamash. And the Shamash goes and lights everybody else, but it doesn't lose its flame. And that's the concept of Torah. I'm sharing you my Torah. You might learn something new, but it didn't take away anything from me. My flame is still intact, and that's the beauty of Torah. So therefore, said Bravo, and then you can light everybody else, and those not only not affect me, but I'm brighter. Says the Netziv, he says, maybe that's how it works with Issachar and Zebulun. He says, it's not really that you are giving away something that it diminishes you. You are giving something else to everybody else without even touching or affecting your own portion in the world to come. There's another concept. People all the time say,
Aliyah to the neshama. I'm doing this. I'm learning this in the zchut and the merit of my parents. I'm going to learn this Mishnah. Have you ever heard that people learn Mishnah? Why do they learn Mishnah? Because if you turn around, the word Mishnah is neshama, the soul. The word Mishnah, if you turn around the letters, means neshama. I'm learning this Mishnah for the neshama. How does it work? So my learning goes to him, or does I keep it? If I keep it, then how does it work? So says the Netziv, maybe it works like the light. I didn't lose anything. All I did was, or becomes another thing. Is, you know, right now interest rates are going up. I don't know about you, but the stock market is a dangerous place. If I'm going to get 3.5% in the bank, I'll put my money in the bank, you know, and, you know, once in a while, I'll get something called interest. We in Judaism talk a lot about this. Yesh mitzvahs, there are mitzvahs that actually you keep your reward in the world to come, but they give you pero, they give you fruits in this world.
Dividends.
Why do you think dividends in this world? And it doesn't affect the principle. And I could once in a while enjoy the dividends and go buy myself a new iPhone with the dividends, and I never touch the principle. Maybe that's how it works. So anyways, just understand that there is such a concept, and it's very, very... The Netziv ends up by saying like this, really, there is not a deal. The guy who sold for 191,000, the Netziv wasn't around in the eBay times, but this is what it would work out. The guy who bought for $191,000 a portion of the world to come from the other guy bought absolutely nothing. He spent $190,000 for nothing. You cannot buy someone else's portion in the world to come. It's an impossibility. It's not mine. Because he cannot give me something that belongs to him. Why? Because that's his journey. You understand? I gotta go to Spain. I have to go to Spain. You cannot get on that plane and go for me. It doesn't work that way. You understand? They want to see my passport. They want to see it's me. I'm the one who has to be there. You cannot go there for me. Try today with the new rules, you know, and you know, show up with my passport and with my ticket and try to show up at the airport, and they're not going to let you in. That's what the Netziv says. That's my journey, not your journey. So therefore, I cannot, or you cannot, get pleasure from my journey. Why is this important? So everybody thinks, and listen carefully, I'm going to stop here. This is very important, and I'm very, 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 very sorry for being so blunt. But if I don't say it the way it is, I did a disservice. What is the most important decision you will ever make in your life?
Will you marry?
I like that. I agree. I definitely agree, because who you marry is who your children are. But believe it or not, there is a more important decision. Believe it or not, there is a more important decision. There is a decision that 7.5 billion people in the world either don't remember that they are making the decision, they forgot that there is a decision to be made, or they don't care about the decision. And most of those people are going to be nichshal, they're going to make a mistake. The greatest decision in your life, the greatest, by far. I'm going to stop here. And I'm going to ask you the following. That's right. Same channel, same. Let me ask you something. Anybody here, please raise your hand if you buy insurance. Anybody here buys insurance, any type of insurance? Jackie, you don't buy insurance? He buys it. Do you buy it? You think she buys it? No, the insurance. Please wait. I'm not kidding. Raise your hand, you buy insurance. Is there someone here who does not, you don't buy insurance? You do. You do. Is there somebody here who does not buy insurance? Please. Maybe you teach me something new. Why is it that nobody, no, there's not one person in this room who will raise their hands and say, doesn't buy insurance. By the way, I'm Mexican. We're in Mexico. Nobody in Mexico drives with insurance. Because probably the car is stolen and the license plate is stolen. So what's the difference? It's not my car. It's his car. It doesn't make a difference.
But
in the United States, in a normal place, in a normal country, normal people, you buy insurance. Why is it the normal people buy insurance? Why?
You don't want to take the risk of not having it.
Now, today you can insure everything. Do you know? A friend of mine told me that he bought a mink coat for his wife. I don't know. $22,000 for a mink coat? Really?
Yeah.
I don't know about this thing. $22,000 I'm sorry, wifey. I have not. That's a lot of shawarmas. That's how everything in me, everything in my life is how many shawarmas. That shaitel, that's a lot of shawarmas. Headers. I call it that skunk is a lot of shawarma. But anyways, why is it my friend bought insurance for his wife's mink coat?
Someone could throw paint on it if they were.
I once heard that if you actually take your mink coat and bring it to Texas and you don't put it in the right place, you know, you can really destroy it. It has to be at a special freezer with a special cover. I don't know about this. This is like,
summer store.
Okay, so help me here, please. I have no idea what obviously I'm out of my league. Now, why are you buying insurance for everything? Everybody has insurance for everything. There is insurance for absolutely everything. Everybody has insurance for everything. Yes, I have a friend who has insurance for his cat. I don't have a cat. I have no idea, but he has a cat, and he has a lot of insurance in his cat. That's very cool. So each his own. God bless him. You know, God bless the cat too. Whatever it is.
Have you ever paid a vet bill? You'll know why you want.
Yeah, I did pay insurance. A bill. Yes, yeah. You're right. Yeah, that's a lot of money. So it's like, everybody has insurance for everything. Let me ask you something. If the greatest decision in the world, don't you think you should buy insurance for the greatest decision in the world?
Probably can't afford it.
What is the greatest decision that you will ever make in your life?
Serve God.
So,
to be Jewish.
To serve God.
You can be Jewish and do a lot of... You can... You may be from other religions or other people and do incredible things in this world, and you can be fulfilling your purpose in this world without being Jewish, because every single person that God created, God gave them a purpose and they have a mission. The greatest decision you will ever make in your life is, are you going to invest and get insurance for something called the world to come? Because we just believe that we're here in a journey. If you remember, the Nama de Kisufa, the soul was put in this world in order to accomplish its mission. Its mission and the whole goal and the whole purpose is the world to come. Therefore, the greatest decision that you already made without knowing it is because you are here, is because you told Borei Olam, you told the Master of the Universe, I don't want to be sitting in the Garden of Eden, and I don't want to be deriving pleasure, because I haven't earned it. I want to go down to this world, and I want to earn it. This world of affliction, I'm going to have to work and collect these mitzvot, these particles, in order to do what? Everything we're doing here is for what? To get the world to come. So therefore, you better be buying insurance for the world to come. How do you buy insurance?
Mitzvah.
To the world to come.
Mitzvah.
So your angels are collecting these mitzvahs because that's what he will give you to the world to come. How do you get insurance to the world to come? Then you have to learn how to get the world to come. How do you learn how to get the world to come?
You study Torah.
You learn Torah because Torah, please write this down, even if it's the only thing you're going to write for the next 3 weeks. I beg you, I implore you to write this down. You can pull out your phone, you can text it, you can write in your friend's back, whatever it is.
Encode.
The reason why, the main quote, the reason why we're here tonight is to learn Torah, because Torah gives us direction in life. The captain who's flying a plane needs to know where he's going to land. And if he makes a mistake, he'll end up in Iceland instead of Gibraltar. And the guy, the captain of the cruise ship, if he bears 2 degrees, he'll end up in Casablanca instead of Funchal, Portugal. And the guy who goes up to the mountains in Chile and is going to go to the Andes and he has no map, he's going to get lost and he's going to die up there in the mountains. And therefore, we need to learn these directions. We need to learn this map. We need to learn this survival guide called the Torah. Because in it, it gives you direction to how to get to the world to come, which is the most important thing, that why we're here. And that's what the investment that you already made by coming down here. Now you got to buy insurance. Once you're here, you got to make sure that you get to that world to come. By learning how to get to the world to come, it's how I buy my insurance. If I don't know what the world to come and how to get it, then how am I going to get there? Without the map, without the survival guide, the guy can backpack, he'll never make it home. I'm going to stop here. I'll take questions. Yes.
So can you come back many times? Maybe you have many.
That's third class reincarnation.
Maybe you have many missions.
Do you want to wait till when we get to reincarnations? Because you'll be able to answer your own question. Because we're going to talk the third class is just about reincarnations. So it's not that I don't want to answer the question. It's that I think you're going to answer your own question. And you'll know so much more when we get to the third class. But if you want, we'll give you a little test. What is the question?
Like, if, God forbid, if I were to die tomorrow,
yes,
my mission would be completed, what I was supposed to accomplish here. But maybe I didn't accomplish my entire mission. So maybe I have to come back again to accomplish another part of my mission.
Correct.
And another part of
correct.
My mission.
Correct. 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 The reason why you and I are here is because you and I have been here many times. And every time we tried to fill up some of those puzzles of that corner, the left corner of the puzzle, the bottom corner of the puzzle, so at least minimum 4 times we have come and we've tried to do different things. That's why sometimes, I'll give an example. It's a fascinating concept in the Torah. This is really deep. This is really deep. There is a concept in Judaism that you're not allowed to wear tzitzis when you go to a cemetery. You cannot take out your tzitzis. You ever heard such a thing? So when I was a kid, I was like, well, that's weird stuff. Now I think it's even weirder. No, but it's not. It's fascinating. Because you don't want the people in the cemetery to be jealous of you. Especially who? The girls, because the girls did not fulfill that mitzvah. So they're jealous that you fulfilled that mitzvah. They're jealous that you fulfilled that mitzvah. But I don't want to get too much into this, but you should know that in Kabbalah, in the Zohar, we believe that God brings you back so many times. Sometimes he'll bring you as a man, sometimes he'll bring you as a woman, so you can now do the 613 mitzvahs. This time around, you have to take care of some mitzvahs. Next time around, you'll come back as a Mexican. Now, the good thing is that I already came as a Mexican. You can only get better from here. I'm allowed to make fun of Mexicans. I'm Mexican. You're not allowed to make fun of Mexicans. I'm allowed to. And they should build the wall, but it should be in Canada because that's where everybody's running. Yes.
Someone is cremated, whatever.
Big, 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 big problem in Judaism. Cremation, cremation. I'll leave it to you with one little story. I have an uncle of mine. It's my father's brother. Lives in Los Angeles. Very, very wealthy man. Never got married. Made a lot of money. Wrote a will. Asked me to be the executor of his will. He calls me up and says, Rabbi Loshak, you're my nephew. You're going to be the executor of the will. I said, send me the will. And I looked at it and says, no, I'm sorry. You have to find somebody else. Why? Because it says I'm going to be cremated. I says, I can't fulfill your wishes.
But you can override it.
No, I can't. As a rabbi, if I accept this call, the last wish must be fulfilled.
Wow.
It's a very powerful thing in Judaism. The tzavot, the last wish must be fulfilled. And if I cannot fulfill that wish, then he has to find somebody else. And I told him, absolutely, under no circumstances will I do it. He says, if you don't do it, you don't get a portion of my will. I said, that's fine. I don't want it. So you know what? 2 years later, he calls me back. He says, I'm going to change it. I said, no, you won't. Because you haven't changed number three either. I won't accept to be your executor of the will because you haven't changed number three. Number three is all his money is going to a UCLA musical department. I have nothing against UCLA or musical department, but I said to him, he says, you know, there is a lot of great other, I'm not saying musical department, UCLA is not important. I'm just saying as a Jew, there is a lot of people who are starving. There is a lot of people who could be helped in the world. You know, there is hospitals, you know, different things. I said, if you change your lot number three, if you give it to charities, then I will be the executor of the world. He says, no deal. I said, okay, no deal.
What if you weren't a rabbi? Could you do it then?
You can't. The last wish, the last wishes must be fulfilled. And if not, do not accept. Very powerful. This is very, very powerful rules. Did I answer your question? Good. Yes.
If the soul has not done enough mitzvahs to gain Olam Haba,
yes.
What happens to the soul?
Keeps on coming back. There is one problem. And this is another part. We're not going to get into the third part, but there is a problem. What if you've been here so many times, and instead of gaining ground, you're losing ground? Then God says, that's it. I've given you enough times. And therefore now you go to a place called Gehenam, which we're going to talk about next week. It's part of the process of the journey of the soul to get to the world to come. But you don't get that step until you finish with this step. So there are people, they keep on, instead of gaining ground, they keep on losing ground. There are 50 levels of purity and 50 levels of impurity. If you keep on going lower in your levels of impurity, then God, and he keeps on bringing you, you were on the 10th level, now you're going to the 30th level, God says, listen, I'm not doing you any favor by bringing you back. So therefore, at that moment, it puts you in a place called Gehenam, which we're going to talk about next week a little bit. What
will
Gehenam?
How do you know?
How do I know where you are?
How do I know where I am?
You're okay, don't worry. You are okay in my book. You are okay in my book. Don't worry, but you're amazing.
That's right.
So how many times do you get? So there is an argument among the sages. Minimum four times. Minimum. He'll give you, let you come four times to give it a try. Maximum, some say 9 times, some say 7 times. But so most Kabbalists say 9 times.
So
after 9 times,
you're done.
You're on your own.
And the time, and the time frame is from Gan Eden to the present.
The time frame is this: the soul comes from Adam Arishon. Adam had inside of his soul. It was such a perfect soul that his soul contained the 600,000 neshamot of the Jewish nation who stood on Mount Sinai. You and I are little itsy bitsy pieces of those original neshamot because God had to break them down in more and more pieces. He has to share it with more people. There is
I don't know, depends who you ask, 15 million Jews in the world.
So the time frame from the time I first was reincarnated to now, was it, did I start back at Sinai and then it's been four times since Sinai or X number of times?
I don't know where you started and I don't know where you end. As the bus driver, in which line?
But I thought all of the Jewish souls were at Sinai though, right?
Yes.
So I was at Sinai. Right?
Yes, you were at Sinai. That's why it says, saw you at Sinai. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So I could have.
And I'll see you at the world to come.
Amen. So it could have been a minimum of four times Sinai and then three since then?
Or nine times.
Or some people, nine times. So you might be here eight, nine times. Some of the people are being here four times. But everyone in this room has been here a couple times.
Never once? I'm like,
No.
Is it true?
Yes.
You were saying the most important decision is to be able to learn Torah, but...
The most important decision is...
The insurance.
The most important thing is to get the world to come. How do I get the world to come? By buying insurance. How do I buy insurance? By learning... How to get the world to come. That's my insurance.
But learning wouldn't be enough. You'd actually have to do it.
Bravo. Learning Torah in itself, that's why all these rabbis make a big deal of learning Torah. Let me tell an incredible secret.
It's implemented.
Can everybody see this table? This is a very... Please stand up if you cannot see. Yeah, I move this. It's so beautiful, I'm afraid to. Eliyahu Hanavi himself is coming for this one. Okay, I don't know if you... I'm sorry. I apologize. I am... Wifey, help me here with the decor. Okay, please, if you can stand up, this is very... I'm going to show you something that I think is one of the most beautiful things I've ever learned in my life. The Chafetz Chaim asks... There was an old man who came to the Chafetz Chaim and he said... You're going to see this in a second. There was an old man who came to the Chafetz Chaim and he said... And he said to the Chafetz Chaim... Can I move this? Sure. An old man came to the Chafetz Chaim and he said to the Chafetz Chaim, he says, I'm an old man, you know, I don't have much to live for. I mean, I'm going to die soon. And I'm very scared because I'm not going to have a portion of the world to come. I'm not the Chafetz Chaim. You learn Torah all of your lives. So therefore you'll be okay. You're the Chafetz Chaim. And the Chafetz Chaim answered to this man and says, I have three questions for you. Number one, were you kind to your wife? Number two, did you cheat in business?
Did you what?
Cheat in business.
Did you steal hookups? Number three, whatever they steal in Tunisia. Number three, did you remove suffering from the world?
Did you remove what?
Remove suffering from the world. And this man says, I was good to my wife, I did not cheat in business, and I did remove suffering from the world, and then we have nothing to worry about. So the old man says to the rabbi, he says, so why is every single rabbi in the world going crazy about Torah? Hey, Torah, can I get kulam? Everywhere. Every rabbi will say to you, Torah. Why? So the Chofetz Chaim says, it's because, I don't know if he said it like this, but this is how it would apply today. That was 1930. When he said it, 29. Today, I'm telling you how we apply to this. If you get in a car and there's two cars driving, if one has turbocharge, he pushes the button and goes, psh. Torah is a turbocharge. It's a certain mitzvah. There's one of the 613 mitzvahs who gives you this incredible turbocharge to get to the world to come faster than any other way. But it doesn't mean it's the only way to get to the world to come. There are many ways to get to the world to come. But if you please stand up, this is very powerful. Says the Chofetz Chaim, it says, why does it say, at the beginning of the creation of the world, says that it says like this, that the Etz HaChaim, the tree of life, was in the center of the garden. The tree of life was in the center of the garden. Says the Chofetz Chaim, what do I have to know? Why do I care? Why does the Torah have to tell me? The first lesson the Torah gives me is that the tree of life was in the center of the garden, says the Chafetz Chaim. So the Chafetz Chaim says it's because you're going to hear all your life. All the rabbis are going to tell you, you have to learn Torah, and if you don't learn Torah... By the way, I've had thousands of students all over the world who told me, and says, I know
I'm not made for learning. I don't have the head. I don't have the tuches.
By the way, that's why it's called the Rosh Yeshiva. He has a Rosh and he has a Yeshiva.
What happens if somebody doesn't have it? He's not into the learning. You never had the right rev, you never had the right. Nobody inspired you, you don't like the subject. But there's a million reasons why a person doesn't get into Torah. So, the Chafetz Chaim was saying, he told the old man, he says, the tree is in the center of the garden. Etz Chaim means the world to come. Etz Chaim means the tree of life. How do you get the tree of life? That's the world to come. By the way, the Sefer Torah, the Ashkenazim have a, you know what the pieces of wood are in the Torah called? The Etz Chaim, the tree of life. Because if you follow these instructions, and if you follow these, you will have direction, which will get you to the world to come. That's what we say when you learn Torah. Because it will get you the Torah. All this Torah is for the Etz Chaim, to get you the tree of life. That's why it's called the Etz Chaim. The two pieces of wood are called the tree of life, because that's the purpose to get to the world to come. Says the Chafetz Chaim, why is the tree in the center of the garden? That's the first lesson we have in Judaism. He says the Chafetz Chaim, because it doesn't matter where you are. It doesn't matter where you are in the garden. It's exact same distance to get to the tree of life, to the world to come. There are people who get to the tree of life by learning Torah. There are people who get to it. There's a student of mine who left yeshiva because he didn't feel accomplished. And all his rabbis and his father told him, he says, you're a nobody because you're not learning. So you know what this boy does now? Every month he gives 6,000 blankets to poor people, 400 refrigerators, and 90,000 meals a month. He tells me he doesn't have a proportion of the world to come. I wish I had a 100th of his portion of the world to come. So says the Chafetz Chaim, there are many ways. You honor your parents, you get the world to come. You understand? You treat your wife respectfully, you get the world to come. There are many ways to get. But Torah has a turbocharge. It's the special that gets you there much faster. That's why it's the big deal on Torah. But it doesn't mean it's the only way, but it is important to learn Torah. People always say, I'm a good person. So someone said to me, an old lady came to me the other day, and she said to me, I'm a good person. And she's a fantastic woman. And she said to me, I said, yes, you are. She said, I'm a good Jew. And I'm a good Jew. And I said, well, what makes you a good Jew? And this, you might get mad at me, throw things at me. But she said to me, says, I give money to the JNF. We plant trees in Israel. I said, that's very good. Do you keep the 13 principles of faith? Do you do chesed besides planting trees? There's a lot of things. To be a good person doesn't mean you're a good Jew. Now, to be a good Jew and to be able to get the world to come, you're going to have to, like it or not, learn Torah, because that's the direction on how to get it. Did I answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Questions, comments, jokes, or recipes? Yes, Rabbi.
So it's interesting that you're saying this. You mentioned there's different times that person could be reincarnated, but my perspective, how many of you agree, is that you really have to approach your world now. Don't think, you know what? Anyways, I'm not going to come back, so I'll grab a little now and I'll grab a little next time.
But
you get the view this time maybe is potentially our last time if we accomplish our mission right now.
Bravo. Bravo. I actually wanted to end with that, so thank you very much for reminding me, because I drank a lot of water in Mexico and I went to that. But that's very important. I don't know about you, but I have no intention to ever come back again.
Oh, no, that's not going to be good, because I know I'm coming back.
I don't want to come back. No. Nobody should want to come back. I don't know about you.
I don't know whether I want to come back.
No, you don't want to come back. It's a world of suffering. It's a world of affliction. You've accomplished enough. God willingly say amen.
Amen. Amen.
That was a horrible amen. This guy's a horrible. You've accomplished enough.
Amen.
So you don't come back here. I'll tell you what. Listen to me.
I'm
married to the greatest woman in the world.
I
had the greatest parents in the world. I had the greatest teachers in the world. I had the most incredible life in the world. I learned by the greatest sages in the world. I sat at their feet for 30 years. And if I don't get it right this time, who the next time? I don't know who is going to be my spouse. And there's going to be some Lupita, and it's like, how's Lupita going to get me to the world to come? And she's not even going to get me to
where were you
to
when I was
Guanajuato. So if this time I had wifey, I had my parents, I had my rabbis, I had my children, I had these incredible people, and I didn't get it right, then it's like, I gotta be out of my mind the next time. I'm not gonna have such
you
a beautiful
there.
Setting.
You weren't there when I was younger. I'm too old now to be able to get to the world to come.
You're not old.
Oh, yeah.
You're wiser. You're wiser now. It doesn't matter the age when somebody learns the secret. It's the moment you learn the secret, which now you know, which is the world to come. Now you start making baby steps. And you say, and by the way, in this, if you really want to talk about real powerful, this is the secret. In Neila, Yom Kippur, they're about to close the doors, the last hour, hour and a half. I don't know if you've ever seen it. In my synagogue, people get up there and they pray for their lives. They really believe that this hour and a half is the most important hour and a half of the year. And they're really, my synagogue, they're really ripping out their hearts and they're really putting their hands and they're giving it to God. And they... And if you think that's, you should have seen my yeshiva where I grew up. People screaming, bouncing, they're talking to God. It's unbelievable. If you have to see this once in a while, to see this, it's unbelievable. The way they really believe that their hands are, their lives are. So let me tell you something. In Ne'ila, what are you supposed to be thinking?
What I'm thinking right now is that I ran so many rabbis out of Dallas because I couldn't even learn Hebrew. That's what I'm thinking right now when you're telling me that.
So in Ne'ila, what we're supposed to be thinking is like, listen, God, maybe I'm not a tzaddik.
No, I'm not.
God, I want you to know that even though I am not, maybe in your eyes, a tzaddik is a righteous person. I want you to know that I do want, in the bottom of my heart, I really want to do your rods on your will, and I really do want a connection with you, God. So even though I'm not a tzaddik, a righteous person, at least I want you to know that I do want to be a righteous person. That's what you're supposed to be thinking in Ne'ila. And God says, just by doing that, opening your heart and saying that that's where you want to go, but then and if you say, this is, Ne'ila is that time that I say, now, it's not tomorrow, it's now. I'm going to accept right now to be a better person, a better asset to society, a better husband, a better wife, a better father, a better mensch. I will try every day to do baby steps to get a little closer. And the secret is baby steps. Nobody needs you to be perfect. But we do. We do need to show God that we are improving baby steps. And that's what we do. So Ne'ila, really, the Kabbalists believe that Ne'ila is the moment that you say, this is the moment that I accept. That I don't want to come back and I'm accepting now upon myself at this moment that even though I'm not a tzaddik, I want to at least try to be one. Help me. Help me, God, get on that path. That my journey of my soul should be the one that you want. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Gracias, gracias, amigo. Okay, just if I could ask you a quick favor. For those that do not sign up, even though you became me tonight,